this week on The Inside Flap.
Yeah, Shake is a guy, man. I always wanted him to be a character people would love because I loved him so much. And it's just really fun to write a character who's likable all the time because it just makes your day happier when you're doing that. It really makes me, as a writer, kind of just perk up to go to work every morning at, you know, 8 a.m. I'm like, oh, good, I get to hang out with Shake today.
And we had a packed house. We're up on these risers that I knew were homemade built.
Now, Laurie,
and at one point I said to you, I said, Dave, do you know if it can support all this weight?
Yeah. And also, you're not just sitting on risers. You're sitting on risers that are on top of risers.
Yes.
So we built platforming.
And I could feel it shaking. The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on yet another Inside Chat edition. That's right. It's just Laura and I. And speaking of the devil, there she is across the table.
That's a weird way of putting it.
To my slant right, that's Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. We are pleased to have you join us for this abbreviated edition of The Inside Flap. Andrew is dealing with a wife who is incredibly sick, and he's got a situation where he's got a kid, he's got to drive halfway across the county. He's got to drive
schools
to a different county, and so he's having a hard time joining us. So.
This is the funny thing with Andrew.
Yes.
He has to drive to a different county for one of his kids to deliver.
Yeah.
And then he also has to drive to a different county for his work.
Right. So it's, and when Katie is incapacitated,
it
makes it tough.
So. It's a lot. Yeah.
He'll be back with us next week, we hope. And until then, you'll just have to deal with the two of us for this. And that by
Laura Medicus,
I'm talking about the two of us. So, but it doesn't matter because we've got a great guest for you this week. We're joined once again by, listen, this is one of my favorite people to talk to, and that is Lou Burney.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. He always wanted to do the old. You know, anytime you got a guy, you know, on a baseball team who's coming up to bat and their name is Lou, or you got the long ooh sound to it, the whole stadium does
sounds
the
sounds like a boo.
Ooh, sounds like a boo, and you always got to have the old, they're not booing, they're saying
Lou. You have to tell that to people
right?
like
you
me.
You always got to tell it to them. But
people like me go, oh, he's getting booed.
Yeah, exactly. So, he's here, hell of a writer, Edgar Award winner, Anthony Award winner, big time writer, love his stuff. His latest is Double Barrel Bluff, which you can pre-order now, and at hit stores November 5th. We'll
That's
have
a fun
that
title.
Conversation for you in just a second, but first we open up our production of Sweeney Todd at East High School here in Denver. Had three shows last week. Got three more coming up this week. And Laura, you and Sylvia, no, three more.
I think you had four. You had four.
No, we've had three.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we did one for the middle schoolers, right.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
Yeah, does that really count? No, I guess
No, they didn't pay.
Oh, so. Okay.
But we had three performances last week. And Laura, you and Sylvia were there for opening night.
We were.
And you were there for a little exciting times.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, you guys never start on time is one thing I want to complain about. I want to complain to management about
sure,
that.
Sure, please do.
But I know how artistic people work.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a packed house. We're up on these risers that I knew were homemade built.
Now, Laura,
and at one point I said to you, I said, Dave, do you know if it can support all this weight?
Yeah.
Because it's not like it's teenagers. These are middle-aged folks and older.
And also, you're not just sitting on risers. You're sitting on risers that are on top of risers.
Yes.
So we built platforming.
And I could feel it shaking.
Over the pit. And then
I know.
All the platforming is above the pit.
Yes.
And then you guys are on stadium-style risers
yes.
on
Handmade.
Top of these platforms.
Homemade. Yeah.
All of them made by high school freshmen. Okay, well, mostly soppers.
And I felt a little concerned about it because it was like when the people were walking past me, and like nothing against the weight because Denver is an area where I think people are really fit.
Yeah.
But once you get past 45, well, you're not as svelte as you used to be.
These are grown-ass people walking on these platforms and sitting on these platforms. So you have a right to be concerned.
And I felt like some movement.
Everything's
sway.
Fine.
Everything. Sway.
You know what I do every day? I crawl.
Jump on it.
No, well, no. I crawl underneath all the platforming and I check. I check.
What do you check?
Well, I check
fault
the
lines?
Supports. I check. I call the.
What do you check it?
The earthquake service line, and I check to make sure that all the fault lines are in place.
Oh,
no,
I'm
checking all the supports underneath. Everything's checked.
But you can
checkity check check.
Listen,
everything's fine.
You could hear a loud crack though.
Okay.
It makes
me
nervous.
You're not hearing any cracks.
Okay. Okay. We didn't hear a crack.
All right.
But we're sitting there. Finally.
Finally. I'm not going to put people on top of platforms that aren't safe.
Finally, the lights dim.
Yeah, right.
The kids come out.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing a fantastic job with the opening number.
Let's not forget Deb's speech.
Deb likes to talk. She
loves to talk.
Honestly, if I were Deb, I'd give a speech too.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Okay.
And she's a theater teacher. She's kind of required to give a speech.
Yeah.
So Deb gives a speech.
It's not a short speech.
No, but it wasn't. Yeah, maybe it was a little longer than typical.
It's
but
a little
you know
long.
What? It was opening night. Is it the same speech every night?
It's the same speech every night. Okay. It's not a 1 to 2 minute speech.
You teachers like to hear yourselves talk.
We do love
you
the sound
really,
of our voices.
Really
this
do.
Is why I got a podcast now.
The speech itself, the length of it didn't bother me at all. It was started late, though.
We always start late.
Yeah.
It's always tough. Well, because it's Denver.
Oh, you
people
know what
are
I gotta
late
say?
Getting into the space.
We weren't late. We were all on time.
all
on the creaking, shifting.
Nothing shifting. These are not
we
tectonic
wanted to get
plates.
This party started.
There's no continental drift here.
So the kids did a great job. It actually, the opening number is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I liked and I never saw again, and I don't know if this particular light bulb stopped working. There was a footlight that shone up at the actors in the center stage, and it was red.
Uh-huh.
And it looked so darn good in that opening scene.
Yeah.
And I never saw it again.
Huh.
Yeah. So I did miss the red spot, the foot.
Well,
so,
as a technical director, I wouldn't know anything about the lighting,
fog machines
so I can't speak to that.
Start coming on.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And I see this fog machines, and I'm like, oh, this is great.
A lot of fog.
Every high school production has
London,
to have
a
fog machine, but it fits with the play.
Right. And we have three of them on stage.
And then
three.
The next thing I know, the kids are still singing because it's a musical.
Yeah.
Well, the house lights come on.
Yes.
And the audience kind of looks around, and I look over, and I can see the fire alarm on the wall blinking.
Yes.
And I see people are like,
a bright white
I can hear people going, it's just the house lights. Someone flicked it on. But I know, no, this is a fire alarm.
You know.
And the actors, I could see them register. The house lights came on.
Right.
I can also see it's drilled into them by Deb and you probably. Show must go on.
Number one
you
rule.
You do not drop your character.
You do not break character.
So they didn't.
Rule number one.
They kept going.
Yes.
Until emergency. This is an emergency.
Yeah.
Please evacuate the building. Came over.
Come over.
Over and over and over again. It was an automated voice. So we get off the creaking risers.
Okay, they're not that creaky.
And we head out. And so we're heading out.
Oh, man.
And so I was like, do we go backstage? Deb's like, no, exit through the front way, which didn't matter. I know she was trying to keep her actors separate. However, we all ended up going
Everybody
out.
Everybody gets
the same,
she's,
the same exit.
Because you don't want to break the fourth wall. So
no,
you always want to have your cast separate from the
and
audience.
So we get out and I wanted to mingle close to the school. And you guys are like, up to the hill.
Head up to the hill.
I know it's protocol.
That's
safety protocol.
You can't
I didn't mind
be
that at
anywhere
all.
Near the
no,
building.
You don't want to be near the building.
Right.
So we head up to the hill.
This is probably now 7:30 at night.
It is
and
it's pitch black outside.
Black.
There
pitch
are
black.
No lights on this hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a swarm of actors, students who aren't actors, maybe crew, students who are there to see the show, yeah. and then parents and families.
And not only just parents, but grandparents.
Yes, older people too.
There are people in yeah. walkers.
Yes, there were.
There are several people in walkers, which
with
I was
oxygen
very concerned
and stuff
about.
Like that. I was concerned about
oxygen,
that too.
On oxygen, it was
not
tough.
An easy group, but they got out in a timely manner. They came back in. Oh, I don't know if they got out in a fashionably manner,
oh. not in a timely manner. It took forever.
Really? I didn't
know
that. To
get everybody out. And here's the thing. When you have a fire alarm that goes off in the building, there are administrators there. There's always an administrator after school. They have to stay the whole time. And they are checking to make sure everyone gets out in a timely manner. This was in no way, shape, or form a timely manner. Oh. This took forever.
Was the administrator there?
They came down. Yeah. No, they have to be there in the building. And they were there and they were overseeing everything. Yeah.
But the thing is, when you have a population that's different than what you're used to, an older population,
and it was fine. There's nothing we could do about it. I'm just saying it took forever because it's not just like the auditorium where there's an exit to the left, an exit to the right.
No, it's jerry-rigged by Dave Medicus. Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't my idea.
I know.
To build these platforms. But yeah, there's just one door.
Yeah.
So you got 150 people on these platforms and there is just one way out. There's a couple ways out, but only one convenient
There's
way out.
There's one convenient yes. way out, yeah.
When you're there late
Yeah, so
night.
We're out in the dark.
Right.
And it was kind of eerie because the cast was out there and they are dressed and make-upped in a way that almost makes them look ghostly.
Right. Well, and then that's the idea behind
they look ghostly.
Yeah, Sweeney Todd, they've got these dark,
dark circles,
under
pale
their eyes.
Yeah. Makeup on.
Right.
And they're dressed in like 19th century garb.
Yes.
Yeah.
Creepy.
It's creepy. Yeah. It was a little bit creepy. But we go back in, sit down, and honestly, you know, by the time the show ended, you just forget that you even had a fire alarm.
Great.
But we could see you, Dave Medicus, in the orchestra.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you sounded great. I saw you at one point fiddling with your light switch.
Right.
Your little, not light switch, your actual light itself.
A stand light. So we had a little issue with the stand lights in that there, every stand has, because it's very dark back there. So,
you put
little stand lights up and Ash.
To illuminate your music.
A shout out to Ash, who's a clarinet player sitting to my left. His light went out. So I gave him my light, and then I went back to the tool room to grab some AA batteries to refresh his light. And then the next night, you weren't there, but I'm a little upset with my stage crew class or stagecraft class. When you got wires coming across the stage where people are entering and exit, you've got to tape them down with gaff tape. So I've got one of the cords, it's an extension cord leading up to the keyboard. Bella's playing the keyboard in front of me. Well, her keyboard goes out night two, and she's jumping around, she's looking around like, what's going on? What's happening? What's that?
It got kicked.
And Stella, yes, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It got kicked because it's right in front of the entrance and exit area.
Oh, for the kids.
So I have to do, and as you can see, everything is right there on stage. It's literally right there where all the entrances are made. I have to do an army crawl. I'm on the lights. The show is going on. I'm on my belly. And I got kids the next night who are like, Dave, why were you like crawling around on stage? Because I had to like figure out where the extension cord got kicked, and then I had to tape it down with gaff tape, like with five. I'm like using half a roll of gaff tape to get this cord taped down.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, not a lot of fun. And then to go back or do an army crawl back to my spot in the back of the band.
Why the army crawl?
What am?
Could you just have gotten up and walked, or would the audience have seen you?
I mean, I'm. That's a great question. I'm trying to keep.
Were you
as
trying
close
to make it all about you? So
no,
everyone's like, what is
I'm
that?
I'm trying to keep
doing?
As close
Army
to the ground,
calling?
So I'm not as obtrusive.
Okay, but then I wonder if you made it more obtrusive by army calling.
Do you think maybe I should have just
a
like
simple get up quickly, tape it,
like kneel down,
tape it, and then go back to your seat.
You know, I didn't know
the army crawling. I wonder how many people.
No, I literally army crawled.
I wonder how many people saw you army crawling.
They all saw.
Because that would have caught my eye.
They all saw. Oh, but it would have caught. Oh, but I guess if I was just like kneeling down, they would have noticed. Oh, that he's just fixing
kneeling
the cord.
Down. I'd be like, okay, he's fixing something. Yeah. Army crawling.
I'm army crawling.
Gosh, I'd love
on
to
my
know.
Belly.
Okay, if you were there, because I got dust all over the front of my. I'd like to know.
Yeah.
I'd like to know if it took you out of the musical, because my guess is it did.
All right. Well, I do have to give a shout out to Ash, because I get, listen,
what instrument does he play?
He plays clarinet.
Yeah.
The time key, the time signatures are all over the place. There's 5/8, there's 6/8, there's 12/8, there's 9/8, there's 4/4, there's 3/4, there's 2/4.
Sweeney Todd is incredibly difficult.
And as someone who never studied music. Like I was in high school marching band and in college marching band, but I've never in my life studied music. It's all just, I just play. You know, I see the music, I can read music, and I can play. But I've never seen, and we've talked about how hard this musical is, but I've never seen this many time signature changes in my life.
Wow.
Where you go from 2 beats per measure to 4 beats per measure to 3 beats per measure, back to 4, back and forth, to say nothing. I'm used to looking at flats when I play trombone. I see, okay, there's an E flat and a B flat. Maybe, it's crazy. There's 3 flats. There's an A flat in there as well. And I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you if my life depended on it, what key that is.
Wow.
This show has got, I'm looking at a song, there's 5 sharps in it for the trombone.
Trombone, for those of you who don't know, is a B-flat instrument.
It's a B-flat instrument, so you never see a key signature where there's sharps.
No.
So there's might be go from 5 sharps down to 2 flats, back to 3 sharps, back to 1 flat, all in the same, all while changing time signatures. And I am so busy with working on
with
the
army
set.
With army crawling.
And army crawling. And I have a lot of issues with my teeth for this one that I'm not going to get into, that I did not allow me to rehearse a lot with the band. I'm reliant on, I got this guy, and I got to shout out Ash again, who's right to my left. And here's what he does. He sees me lost. He will play the clarinet with one hand, his left hand, while pointing to me. Pointing to my music to where I'm supposed to be on my right.
That and is then, a great guy.
Yeah, he's been, and then I see him go to, and then he's got Beckett to his left. Beckett, great kid. Shout out to Beckett. He sometimes doesn't know when to keep his mouth shut, especially
I got a little sweet thing about Beckett.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So
I know his parents listen to those shows.
Beckett, so.
Shout out to Janelle.
So that one of the lead, Mrs. Lovett or Miss Lovett, whatever her name is, her microphone was out the night that I saw it.
Uh-huh.
And so she's singing about meat pies, but her microphone's out. So I really can't hear her.
Okay.
Tell you what I heard, who was playing beautifully, is Beckett. And
so
I look over
the sax.
And I was like, who's on the sax? And I see him there and he had the most beatific, happy smile. He was in... Beckett was in his happy place.
There's nothing more that Beckett loves than the sound of his own voice and the sound of his own instrument.
He is just playing the sax. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just listen to Beckett play the sax, because I clearly cannot hear Mrs. Lovett.
That's funny.
It was
that's
really funny, though.
Oh, good for him.
Because at first I was like frustrated that I couldn't hear her.
Right.
And then I look over and I see someone just enjoying themselves. And I'm like, well, at least he's happy.
Beckett deserves some props after what happened, I guess, on intermission the other night when... apparently the band was backstage in the back hallway behind the auditorium, and they had got a hold of Mrs. Lovett's cart, which is on wheels. And apparently they were pushing each other up and down the hallway, taking videos of each other.
Sure.
Well, guess who came by and caught them?
Did Deb find them?
Deb caught them. And if you've heard me talk about Deb, you know, she does not mince words. And there were some harsh words. And then as she was walking away, she gave the, what are we, in middle school?
Aw.
And... there's a kid, the aforementioned Beckett, who can resist, gave
Oh, no.
Gave a, yes, we are. Which forced Deb to turn back around,
circle around, and
into them for another 5 minutes.
Oh, you can't try to have the last word.
When we got the band back together backstage, and Chloe was like, "Becky, you can't. You just gotta let her be.
You gotta let her be. You know, kids like to have fun.
Some kids like to.
I've been that age,
and I get it. Yeah. I get it. We've been working our ass off on this extremely hard musical. But so anyway, so kudos to the band. We're doing the best we can. And
I don't know a lot about music. I love music. I listen to music all the time.
Right.
But I know enough about it from being a listener and a fan of music that this is probably the hardest musical I've ever heard in my life.
Listen, not only sometimes
it's
the singers they're singing different melodies.
They are singing.
We're playing different melodies.
Okay. Singers are singing a different melody. It is up to them to try to figure out how to hit their notes correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got that going on.
Right.
The band is not playing in a melodic fashion. No, it is atonal.
So
it is not
absolutely
like, oh, I'm going to hear that G and I'm going to hit that G.
No,
you're not going to be able to. And then sometimes on stage, another group of singers will be singing something completely different.
Yeah.
So you have three different things going on.
Yeah.
And it's so complex.
This is Sondheim at his Sondheimiest.
I think this is his most famous, most renowned musical.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hard and even
hard as heck.
We had I posted about it on Facebook and your friend Emily.
Yes,
friend
who's Emily, a drama.
Who is a drama.
She's a drama teacher.
Drama teacher.
Yes.
Said, wow, I can't believe you're doing, you know.
She's like, that is a hard, all caps musical.
That is so hard.
Yeah.
And it is.
And as an audience member, like, you don't have to be very educated at all to be like, whoa.
What's going on?
Haven't heard
on
this
here
before.
Yeah. So.
But it's amazing and it's awesome. And
it
the actors,
great.
It's such a joy to see. I don't know. I'm going to sound super old when I say this, but it's such a joy to see young people and like passionate about something.
Yeah. And I love to see Ash when he every once in a while I'll see him give me the thumbs up so I know that I'm playing the right. And sometimes I'll get the no-go, the right hand quick shake. Like, no, you're not playing here. You're not playing here. Stop playing.
As you start with your trombone.
Yeah. And then I'll point out where I'm supposed to be.
Oh, that's funny.
All right. Well, I'll tell you where you are supposed to be. You're supposed to be online ordering the new Lou Burney book, which is so, so good. This is one of my favorite guests that we have every year. I love talking to him. This is our third time talking to him. It was just me this time. It is the new book is called Double Barrel Bluff. You can pre-order it now. Comes out November 5th. Now, this is his third book featuring former wheelman for the mob, Shake Bouchon. Although you don't need to have read the other two Shake books to love this one. And Double Barrel Bluff finds Shake trying to live the straight life in beautiful, peaceful Bloomington, Indiana, with his wife Gina, when suddenly people from his old life in the Armenian mob come back into his life and do a good job of mucking stuff up. So he is forced to go over to Cambodia to find his now missing former boss. You'll hear Lou talk a lot more about the book along. We got a good conversation about sports movies. We talked a lot about Dennis Quaid versus Kevin Costner as far as who plays the better sports actor, or who do you go with? If you're going with Kevin Costner, we both landed on the side of Dennis Quaid, but as far as
the pantheon Dennis Quaid is more physical.
Sports movies.
Dennis
Quaid both
seems
have done
more athletic to me as an actor, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know, you know, he's done cycling, he's played football player.
I'm going to go with Dennis Quaid.
Kevin Costner's a golfer.
Yeah, but Kevin Costner, I think of now, is associated with Western stuff.
That's true. Yeah, you know what? You're right.
Dennis
you think
Quaid
of him now,
has
more,
and had a lot of like boyish athletic charm
to
me.
And Lou brought up The Rookie, which is
The
just,
Rookie
just
is
such
unbelievable.
Great,
that's what I think of when I think of Dennis Quaid sports.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, for
very,
sure.
It could have been
him out
really
there pitching,
formulaic,
at the,
and just like a Disney movie. But man,
why are we talking about this? Yeah,
yeah. Why are we talking about that? Let's get to Lou Burney. So here now, talking about his book, Double Barrel Bluff, and Dennis Quaid. This is Lou Burney. all doing all right. Your OKC Thunder off to a good start.
This year, man. This is the year.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, I think so. What's the hat you're wearing? What's that hat?
We CU.
Oh, they're doing pretty good this year, too.
Yeah, we got a daughter's in the marching band up there. She's a freshman. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. We are all in on Coach Prime. All in.
Yeah, man. What are they, 5-2?
Six and two. Just got six and two. Just got bowl eligible.
Yeah, that's right. They just won. That's fantastic. They're doing really good.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider 2 years ago, we were a 1-11, and by all accounts, probably the worst team in college football.
Yeah.
And now here we are. Maybe a Big 12 championship game. Who knows? Who knows?
That's fantastic about your daughter in the marching band, man. Those are always it's fun to watch.
It's so great, and they do like a pep rally the night before we go up. The whole city of Boulder comes out and lines the streets there, and the football team comes out. Coach Prime comes out and
that's great.
Play all the songs. It's really cool.
Love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, though, I tell you what else. What I love was your book, Double Barrel. You see what I did there, Lou?
I like it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Double Barrel Bluff. This is a tale of monks, twins, and butterscotch pudding. Just such an amazing read. Really a lot of fun. What was it that inspired you to bring Shake back and tell this tale?
You know, I think it was a trip my wife and I took to Cambodia. And we went with no idea of writing a book set there or anything like that. It was just a pure vacation. And we got there, and I remember walking through this park in the middle of Siem Reap at dusk. And we're like, what is this interesting exotic fruit that is hanging from all the trees? Like millions of these fruit things hanging from the trees. And a second later, we realized they're bats. And we're like, wow, this is a cool place. Like, and right away, we knew it had to be something for a book at some point.
Yeah, that would be that would take you aback for a second.
Yeah, Rudy. No one seemed to mind. Everyone was cool with the bats, so we're like, all right, we'll be cool with the bats. So.
Do they fly around?
At dusk, it's really an amazing scene. I can't remember if I put it in the book or not, but they once a day or twice a day, sunrise and sunset, they all come swarming back or from the trees, and it just like covers the sky. It's really amazing.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. Were you able to write off that trip?
You know, I can't remember if I was able to or not. I have in the past, but that may have come too late for me to write it off. But yes, I should have.
Yeah, for God's sake, come on, man. Well, you got a book out of it, so I guess that's
okay. Yeah.
That's okay. Now, it's been a few years since you wrote for Shake. This is the third book with him. But what's it like writing for a character? Do you go back and read the other two books? How do you dip back into his mind? What made you decide to bring him back?
Well, partly like Shake and Gina, these characters are just so part of my mind already. They're just sort of braided into my creativity, and they live there. They're like real people to me, which I guess is probably a sign of psychosis in some cultures. But for me, it works as a fiction writer.
Yeah.
But they're like going back to old friends, and it's like, oh man, I haven't seen you guys in a while. It's so great to be back. And I didn't reread the first two books. I mean, I had a good sense of what the plots were. I knew I wanted to do a very different kind of plot, and I knew I wanted to do the characters at a very different point in their lives. And from there, they just came really naturally with these characters. So, you know, it's one of those things, like so much of writing is hard. When it's easy, when the characters come easily, you really have to embrace that as a writer, I think.
Yeah. I love how you set it up too. We got Shake. He's in Bloomington, Indiana. I mean, do you just picture it as just like the safest place, you know, in America, and everything's perfect. He's settled down, you know, he's getting ready to barbecue or something there at the beginning. And then a dog barks, you hear a dog barking, and you're like, okay, here we go. What's going on here? And then, you know, all hell breaks loose, but you just,
yeah.
Things weren't going to stay nice and quiet for him and Gina.
No, you get one chapter of nice and quiet, and you better get kicked into gear pretty quickly, I think, with a thriller.
Did you spend time in Bloomington?
I did. I taught a couple summers there in their summer writing conference. And so I kind of got to know it as this beautiful little town. And I thought, yeah, let's just, instead of an exotic place to start with, let's put them somewhere that's very safe and calm and then turn things upside down.
I did. I was wondering if you taught, because, you know, I'm a teacher myself. And then there was one line in the book
that made me slap my knee. And that was when French, the professor, he was secreted away with his partner he did not like. And he likened it to, quote, being trapped in an English department faculty meeting that never ended. Good God, you nailed that one. I mean, anybody who's ever been a teacher, especially when you're with a bunch of, I used to teach English. I teach
the English,
and stuck with a room full of English teachers. Just the worst.
I want to make it clear that that does not apply to my current teaching job whatsoever, which the meetings there are really wonderful and efficient, but I'm talking about past ones, right?
Of course. Oh, yeah, of course. We're all aware of that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, that's, I figured, you know, like that was a little autobiographical right there.
Yeah. Did you, is it nice for you when you're writing, is that now when, you know, you've got your teaching gig and you've got to answer to people, but then in writing, do you feel like you're writing for yourself or are you still having to write for your editor? How's that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's kind of like a mixture of things. I think I'm always writing for myself to some degree. Because I think you can't be a really good writer unless you're sort of writing what you want to write, what you'd love to write. But I'm also thinking about the audience. And I love books that are in conversation with the reader, you know. And so, like, I don't want to be one of those kind of writers who just, you know, writes something so obscure without any regard for the audience that, you know, like, who wants to read this? Like, I want to be in a conversation. So I'm always thinking about, like, what works, what doesn't work, what might work for the reader, what might surprise them. So that's part of it for sure for me, too.
Well, I like how Shake is forced into being a kind of a reluctant detective in the book, as he says he doesn't know anything about detecting and mentioned a few things about TV mystery tropes he doesn't like. Are you like Shake? Are there some tropes or cliches that irritate you?
No, yes and no. Yes, they definitely are some tropes and cliches that irritate me. But as a writer, I always see them as a great opportunity to subvert, to twist around, to play with. So yeah. I like all that stuff because it just gives you an opportunity to jog left when everyone expects you to go right. And so to me, I read a lot of detective fiction and I love sort of finding things that are common and then doing something a little bit different with them.
As a teacher, I don't like first of all, I hate the hero teacher trope. Like, I can't stand that. But the cliche that drives me bonkers more than anything else is like when you're watching when the teacher's up there, he's teaching the class or whatever. And then no teachers in Hollywood have any sense of how to tell time because the bell rings right in the middle of their sentence. And they're like, I read chapter 5.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts.
Right. In real life, it's like you're waiting for the bell to ring in this dead silence and you're waiting. Please ring. Yeah, I got you.
Exactly.
That's right. We need to see that one. I'm going to write that next time. Yeah.
Please do. There's nothing worse than a classroom that's too quiet. It just drives me. Something's wrong. You're like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah. Exactly.
Too quiet. Kids, talk. Please talk. You do have a nice Breaking Away reference. I love that movie, Breaking Away. I LOL'd when you mentioned the short shorts that they wear in that movie. Dennis Quaid with his short shorts.
It was a different time, Dave. It was a different era. Yeah. I mean, it's such a great movie. And I watched it again when I was writing this book. I watched it again to just sort of get back in touch with it. And it holds up so well. It's really still a great movie. Yeah. Great sports movie. But yeah, the shorts are the one thing that do not age well, I think. So, but you know, they might be coming back someday. Who knows? This time next year, you may be wearing short shorts.
I might be. You never know. You know, basketball shorts are getting shorter.
They are. Yeah, it's interesting.
Scotty Barnes wears those really short shorts. Did you? Now I got to. Yeah, I got to rewatch Breaking. Now I just remembered. I got to rewatch. First, I got to rewatch Breaking Bad.
And yeah, then right.
Watch Breaking Away. But you know, Dennis Quaid. They say he calls himself the king of the sports movie. I don't know if you think Kevin Costner or Dennis Quaid would be the king.
Well, that's a good question though, because Quaid's been in some really good sports movies.
Yes.
That one baseball movie, I can't remember the name of it, where he plays the left-hander.
The Rookie.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. Right, The Rookie. That's good. That's a good movie. Yeah,
that's a really good one. Yeah.
That's like a good debate question. Who's the king of the sports movie? Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I love that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's good.
I'm gonna go. I go with Dennis Quaid. I love them both. It's hard not to like, or hard not to dislike either one. But I'm gonna go. I gotta go with Dennis Quaid. Like, you know, Kevin Costner played the golfer in Tin Cup.
Yeah. But I would say the best sports movie of that group is probably Breaking Away. And so that gives an edge over Bull Durham, I love.
Well, Durham, I mean, you
So
got
that's a close call between the two headliners, I think. I
Ron
didn't
Sullivan.
I didn't love I'll admit I didn't love Field of Dreams. Like, it was not my favorite film.
Whoa,
I
whoa.
know, I know. So that's the one knock against Costner for me. I
How?
know.
What?
I know.
I've literally never heard anyone say they didn't like Field of Dreams.
It's a little sentimental for me.
It's a little sad.
I'm a Bad News Bears best baseball movie ever kind of guy. That's the baseball movie.
Walter Matthau driving around with a beer. I
With a
mean,
beer,
you can't go wrong.
right? Yeah.
But you can't. Yeah, that movie, you can't show that to your kids in class anymore. That's
No.
got some unfortunate.
No. I wanted to show that to my nephews, and my wife was like, nope. I remember that movie. Can't do that.
No, you can't. Bull Durham, though, Ron Shelton wrote a book about the making of that movie. I don't know if you read that, but
No.
it's really good.
I gotta check that out. I just watched that pretty recently, and it holds up really well too, I thought. Like, it's a really good movie.
That's one. If it's on, I'm sticking with it and hanging out for a little bit with Crash. Love Crash.
Yeah. White Men Can't Jump is like Shelton's best, I think, though. That's a great movie.
Oh, that is a great one. They'll show you some fashion trends in that with Woody Harrelson and
Yeah, right.
Wesley Snipes.
Right.
Some short shorts there. Now I also love the story of Bartleby the Scrivener, and there's a nice mention of it here in this book. Are you a fan of that? Do you teach that story?
No, I think I may have taught it in the past, but it's not something I feel like today. I try to do more contemporary stuff to capture the students a little. I mean, I do older stuff too, but Melville, I don't know, man. I have great respect, but I don't think it's the right thing for the TikTok generation.
No, probably not. Probably not. You do mention Top Chef in the book. Maybe you teach Top Chef, or do you watch it? Are
I
you?
watched Tosh. Yeah, I'm a big
Do
Top
you?
Chef fan. Yeah,
Huh?
yeah.
Yeah. Top Chef.
I think that's how Shake became a chef in the very first book, if I remember right. It was because I'd been watching Top Chef the first season, and I'm like, oh, I'll make this guy a wannabe chef. And so I kind of think that's how Shake ended up being into cooking.
Huh. Interesting. Top Chef or Top Gun? Which one are you going with, Lou?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm gonna go with Top Chef.
That's the right answer. You had a bold statement that you did not like Field of Dreams. I don't care for the Top Gun movies. I can't stand them.
Oh, really? Okay, because I'm kind of agnostic on it. I'm kind of like, yeah, they're fine, but that's interesting. You can't stand them. Why not?
I had just all the jocularity, the boys being boys. Look
Yeah.
at them out there. It's just
Yeah,
too over
I
the
get
top.
that.
It doesn't ring true to me. It's
I
a
get
little
that.
the forced camaraderie and
Now, I really did love the movie The Right Stuff. Now, to me,
that's yes.
that's much more authentic in terms of like the male bonding experience.
Speaking of Dennis Quaid, I think he's in that one, isn't he?
He
Is he?
does. He plays Gordon Cooper. Yeah,
That's
there
right.
you go. Good call. I
Yeah,
forgot about that. Yeah.
but that would not be con now it could we can stretch it and call that a sports movie because I mean they are athletes, so they got the right stuff.
And they're racing, and they're yeah. I think if we're including that one, then it's an easy call for
All
Quaid, I
right, and
think. Yeah.
Dennis Quaid wins.
All right. Yeah.
We just
He's
put
probably
him.
been in another one. He was in a football one too. One wasn't he? Didn't he play?
Everybody's All American.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah,
Is that
or
Tom
something like
Cruise?
that.
Yeah, he wasn't a football one.
I should have been prepared for this. You hit me with a curve on this, but this is a good conversation. Short shorts. Sports movies, all this is Top Chef. This is good.
Yeah, we're really cooking now. How about music? You always seem to put music in your books, which I like. We get the Bee Gees, we get a little Dwight Yoakam in this one. Are you someone who listens to music while you write?
Yeah, for sure. I listen to a lot of different kinds of music. I love a lot of different kinds of music, and so I try to listen to something that puts me in the feel for each book I'm working on. So if I'm writing something set, in the 80s, I try to listen to 80s music. If I'm writing something set now, I try to think, what would the character be listening to? But again, I have some power over that, so I don't listen to anything I hate. So I make sure my characters have good musical taste,
Yeah, I think it's very important, isn't
Yeah, I think so.
it?
But I think I was listening to some old Stax stuff when I was writing Double Barrel Bluff. So I had that B3 Hammond organ in there. I think I have a mention of that because that was really on my mind, that kind of smooth, funky sound.
Nice. We just did, or we're currently doing, in the process of doing, Sweeney Todd. And that's got the nice organ at the beginning of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I teach at Oklahoma City University, which has a really great musical theater program. And last year they did a production of Sweeney Todd that was phenomenal, which is really, really great.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I do the set. So we built we actually were able to borrow the chair from CU. They got the nice chair that goes
down. Oh, wow. Oh, cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
And we put them up on the second floor, and we built the director was like, I want a slide to send the bodies down. And I'm picturing, you know, we got this 12-foot platform on the second level. I'm picturing a nice, gentle slide. She's like, no, the chair's got to go right here. I said, Deb, you can't put, the kids are going to go, we'll make it work. We'll make, these kids, we tried. I set them down. Man, they were getting black and blue bruises as we were rehearsing. We finally had to put two techies underneath on the first floor to grab their feet where they can't be seen.
Oh, good.
And stop them down. We figured it out, but it was pretty sketchy.
That's hilarious. It's all art, though. You're in service of art, man. You're going to get beat up sometimes. Right. So, yeah, that's great.
You sacrifice your body. Do you sacrifice your body to write? How early do you get up to write? Or what are you, or maybe you're
I get up early, but I usually start writing around 8:30, something like that. So not too early.
Yeah, that's nice. A lot of these authors getting up at the crack of dawn. I gotta be up before the internet gets me. It's like no,
man, no. I'm too old for that shit. I write when it's sane, when it's civilized.
Yeah, exactly. I just can't function that early in the morning.
Definitely.
But the next writer tells me that they got to get up and be like, you know, Lou Bernie does it.
Yeah, he says it's bad. He's against it. Die young that way.
I did like how you made Shake. It was the former wheel man. You know, he's trying out the straight life. He's working as a driver's ed teacher. How crazy.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. I hope that joke landed. I didn't know if anybody would get it or not. So yeah, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
It was perfect. I didn't know until the cop.
Yes.
And walks up to the cop. He's like,
good.
Oh man, that was. And that was perfect.
You made my day because you never know when something like that's going to land. And sure. So I'm really thrilled to hear somebody got that. So
I had a huge smile on my face. That was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, Shake is a guy, man. I always wanted him to be a character people would love because I loved him so much. And it's just really fun to write a character who's likable all the time because it just makes your day happier when you're doing that. It really makes me, as a writer, kind of just perk up to go to work every morning at, you know, 8 a.m. I'm like, oh, good. I get to hang out with Shake today. And Gina, too, who I like a lot as well.
Yeah. And Gina, come on. Let's not forget about Gina. She's great, too. And you got a nice little subplot where she's helping out a women's group, and she gets to do her own thing there, too. So it's I like that she had something to do, too. You know, a nice little storyline for her.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Was that always something that you wanted to make sure and include to give her something?
Yeah, for sure. Because I think in certain kind of crime books, you know, the woman or the significant other gets kind of shoved to the side a lot of times and just plays sort of a device role. And I kind of want to make sure Gina was her own fully developed character for sure.
Yeah. And I love how his adversary becomes his ally in this one. Dickram, how do you pronounce it?
That's good. Yeah. Dickram. Yeah.
The way he butchers the language, the way you write for him also just put a huge smile on my face. It's just... He has a certain way with the words. Is that fun to write for when you're writing?
Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah, it's really fun. And I have a couple of Armenian American friends who are kind of like, oh God, for God's sake. And I'm like, but come on, it's the kind of book where we're just having fun. And
yeah, exactly.
And they're both like, yeah, I know a guy like that. So it kind of registers a little bit.
What's he say? Cock butt. What does he say? Do you call it cock shot? What the hell?
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. I'm blanking on it.
It's your book, Lou.
I know, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff anyway.
I should have put him in short shorts now that I think about it. Like, he's the guy who should be wearing short shorts. I totally forgot about that.
Yep. Now, one of the strangest things in the book that I had never heard about are these make merit birds, these caged, and I had to Google it. This is a real thing. Did you learn about this on your trip?
Yeah. We were walking around Siem Reap, and there would be these people on street corners selling, locals selling birds in cages. And we were, my wife and I were both like, oh, that's sweet, I guess. Like, you know, they have bird pets. And then we started to worry, do they eat them? And that worried us a lot. And then we just asked somebody, we're like big on just striking up conversations with local people. And they're like, no, people buy them and they'll let them go free in order to make merit. It's a Buddhist kind of idea. And we love that idea. And then, as I said in the book, we also then had the thought that someone had to catch those birds in the first place. But again, that kind of makes perfect sense in the scheme of things.
Yeah, it is pretty funny how you point that out. It's some kind of weird logic to that one. Let's trap the birds.
Circle of life or something. I don't know, but it's kind of just a cool little thing, or it's a creepy thing, depending on how you look at it. So
I'm gonna err on the side of creepy. Speaking of birds, we were just watching Alone. You were watching this show Alone?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's great.
What is it?
They take about 10 people and they drop them off in the wilderness, and they're all at different locations. So they don't meet up with each other, but it's who can last the longest. And I think usually they go to 80, 90, 100 days. They're in season six right now. They take them to the Arctic in late fall.
Oh, and why haven't I heard of this? This is fantastic.
It's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely, and it's a show the whole family can enjoy and watch together.
Wow. Like 90 days they're out there?
Something? Yes, by themselves. There is no interaction with anybody else. They have a satellite phone, and they film everything by this. So they have all their equipment, and, you know, I think a crew leaves fresh batteries for them or whatever, but they don't have any contact with them. Everything you see is filmed by them, and they have to, they get, you know, they bring like 10 supplies. So they all have knives and stuff, and they get a tarp, but they have to build their own shelter.
Oh man, I got to check this out. Yeah, for sure.
Literally eating birds, and they show how they skin them and everything. These are extreme survivalists.
So I'd be dead in like literally 40 minutes, probably. Like, I would have frozen to death. I'd be like, it'd be fall and I'd be dead. So
it was like
snowing
on day three. Oh, you got to watch it though.
Yeah, I got to check that out. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Have you been watching anything? What do you got going on? You got any team?
Let's see what I watch. No, I'm trying to think what I've been watching. The last really good show I watched was Ripley on, that was Apple TV, the one based on Talented Mr. Ripley. I really loved that show. That was cool. And I finished up Better Call Saul, finally, which I loved. I loved Breaking Bad. Better Call Saul was really great, too. So those are the last kind of two that I've really been into.
Breaking Bad, I just rewatched that one with my daughter, and I'm ready to go back because keeps popping up on my Facebook feed these Breaking Bad memes, and I'm just like,
such a good show, man. It's just like great storytelling all the way through.
Breaking Bad or The Wire, which one you got?
For the full run, I would say Breaking Bad, but if you narrow it down to one season, I'd take the first season of The Wire over anything. How about you?
The Wire. I'm from Baltimore, so I have to. I'm contractually obligated to take The Wire. I go back to Homicide: Life on the Street.
That was fantastic too. Yeah,
it was Andre Brower when he. Oh, that probably my favorite all time TV character ever was Frank Pendleton, Andre Brower in Homicide.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah, first two seasons of The Wire, I think, are like probably the best two seasons of TV that have ever been done. Maybe they're really incredible.
Yeah. Oh, and you had authors writing for the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Pelicanos is one of my favorite novelists for sure. Just bar none.
He's great. You ever meet him?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, really?
George. Yeah. Nice. It's a pretty tight community, the crime community. Like, it's been great. Like, I know a lot of people, like, feel really fortunate just because the community is so supportive.
Do you run your stuff by anyone, or do you just lean on your editor?
My wife reads it. She's my big beta reader, I guess you'd call it. And then I have a great agent and a great editor. So that's kind of the tight circle for me.
Mm. There is now it's right there in the title, so no spoiler alerts, but there's a lot of good talk in this book about bluffing and tells. Really interesting to me when Sheikh, who prides himself on spotting a liar, he couldn't tell if a certain character was lying when they were smiling because the guy was Cambodian, and the smile there might mean something different. Really fascinating stuff. You don't think about how different cultures might have different tells. Are you a good poker player, Lou? You play, you get around.
Fair. Good enough to not play too often. Like I'm fair, but there's now poker's become such a huge thing, and there's people who are incredibly good, even in the local situation. But that idea of like a foreign culture, like I hit that when I was in Cambodia. Like like a smile means 30 different things there, and there are 30 different things it doesn't mean here. It's really interesting to me, is like, how do you navigate a completely different world?
Yeah. What are you reading? Any good books recently?
Right now I'm rereading, right to this minute, I'm rereading Jim Thompson, the Killer Inside Me. No, I'm sorry. After Dark, My Sweet. I just finished Killer Inside Me, and I'm rereading After Dark, My Sweet. Just 'cause I like to go back sometimes and read those old school men and women, just to get a feel for like how good crime fiction has always been and how deep and rich. And there's so many good writers throughout history.
There really are. Is that your go-to genre? You stick to crime fiction?
No, I read everything. I love all kinds of fiction. Yeah, I really do. I read more fiction than nonfiction, but I really love all kinds of fiction. How about you? Do you read all sorts of stuff?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. But my go-to is definitely crime fiction. Mm. But it's got that why I love your books is because they have a sense of humor. You got to have humor.
Yeah.
You got to have so many books.
Yeah.
Mysteries, these psychological thrillers, they take themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
Every character, there's no humor whatsoever.
Yeah, I like a little touch of humor for sure. I'm more of I'm an Elmore Leonard guy than a Jim Thompson guy.
Yeah.
Just because I like a little humor mixed in. So.
Yeah, you can definitely see their influence on you with especially with this one, Double Barrel Bluff. Such you start off with the humor with Shake as the driver, and keep it going all the way through. So well done.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Yep, good chatting with you. And
it's great to see you again, Dave. And I really appreciate this is a conversation I needed this morning. This is a fun conversation. Gets me going.
Yeah. Good. It's always easy to talk to you, and I appreciate you talking a little sports and talking a little movies. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's good fun stuff. So,
all right, take care.
Thanks very much, man. Thanks. Yep.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much to Lou Burney for joining us. Check out his book, Double Barrel Bluff. And, if you got time, we got three more shows of, I don't know when this episode is going to air. Anyway, we'll be at East High School.
Oh, to see the musical. And
to
Dave.
See Sweeney Todd.
Who knows what could happen on the night you go?
The 30th. This won't be out the 30th.
31st.
Halloween night at 4 o'clock.
And Friday, the 1st.
And the 1st, 7 o'clock. See you there.
Adios. Yep. Emergency. This is an emergency. Yeah. Please evacuate the building.